The Bumblecast is for entertainment purposes only. The hosts' comments and opinions, and those of their guests, are wholly their own and do not represent that of any other entity. Content is provided as is, with no guarantees of accuracy or timeliness. Welcome back to the Bumblecast. I'm your host, Kyle JCRB, and I'm joined once again by none other than Aaliyah Baker. Don't laugh at me. How dare you? Laugh at me, unable to speak. I can talk, I swear.
All this time, you still can't pronounce my name.
I wasn't even trying to pronounce your name.
I know, you couldn't even get to that part.
Exactly, see? I wasn't even trying to pronounce your name, and I couldn't get to it. Anyway, hello, Aaliyah Baker. Welcome back.
Hi.
We have more Archie Sonic stuff to talk about.
We do, because I got tired last time.
That's okay. We went for a while last time, to be fair.
Well, I do yap.
No, well, I mean, it was very entertaining and very enlightening and,
informative.
And informative, yes.
I mean...
But we still have more to talk about.
Yeah, and these last two are a bit of a doozy, I think.
Yes, indeed. For those just catching up, we are talking about Archie Sonic, Super Special Number 11.
Girls Rule.
Girls Rule. Uh-huh. Go back and listen to part one. Go back and listen to part one if you haven't. Because, oh boy, this comic's a doozy. That's one way of putting it.
Is an analysis.
Mm-hmm.
It could maybe serve as a subject in a gender studies class.
This is maybe a cautionary tale of what not to do. Anyway.
A special celebrating female characters and...
Mm-hmm. Special, yes.
Well, we got through
three
of the five stories.
Yes.
The last two are Julie Sue's in Shadows.
Shadow the Hedgehog, just Shadows.
Just Shadows.
Yes.
And then Princess Sally's Ascension.
Uh-huh.
So what should we tackle first? Because I kind of feel like this is, you know, two roads diverged in the woods, and I was afraid of both.
Oh boy!
Dark and full of terror.
Well, let's see. Do we leave Sally for last? She's kind of the big one in terms of
maybe.
Sonic female characters at this era, anyway. So maybe leave Sally for last.
Okay, everyone has to sit through if they want to see what happens to Sally.
Yeah,
or doesn't happen to Sally.
I mean, so far, not much has really happened in this book. The stuff has happened, but nothing's really happened, which is weird. Like, people have died, but it still feels like nothing's happened.
It's a celebration.
Uh-huh.
A payback that's yet to come later.
Uh-huh.
It's very exciting in that regard.
It totally is. This isn't just filler, I swear.
Okay.
Anyway.
So, we'll start with Julie Sue's story.
Okay.
So, once again, like all of them, written by Ken Penders.
Uh-huh.
And this one stands out a little bit because it's illustrated by Patrick Spaziante, a.k.a. Spaz.
Okay.
Who was, for the most part, known as a cover artist. For this era.
Yeah, that's why there's the line art is so busy in this story.
Yeah, and he also did some of the character design work, kind of behind the scenes, and also something that isn't, I feel, pointed out a lot, but is kind of amusing, and that'll come up a bit later, I guess, at the Sally story, is because he was one of the in-house artists at the time, you know, when a lot of people basically were mailing in their work.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is well before... A lot of it went digital, that people would still physically mail in their pages and whatnot. He was working as an in-house artist. So basically, when there were a lot of last-minute art changes or edits to be done or mistakes to be fixed or whatever, he would be the one to do the redraws.
Okay, yeah.
And sometimes, in my opinion, at least, once you know what to look for, you can really see it. It's kind of funny, but...
Yeah, you can kind of tell.
But yeah, so he was kind of doing a lot of work behind the scenes. Not necessarily credited all the time, I guess, but that's another thing. As much as like a lot of the Echidna designs are kind of, you know, joked about for being, oh, here's the Knuckles recolors, blah, 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 so-and-so. If any do ever stand out as being slightly more interesting or detailed, that's probably his doing.
Probably, yeah.
And I should say, to the absolute best of my knowledge, that Julie Sue is largely his work.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I understand it, the original concept for her was pretty much given as Knuckles in a red dress with a sawed-off shotgun.
Okay. I mean, sawed-off shotgun, that's pretty cool, but Knuckles in a red dress. Yeah. All right.
I mean, I always remember that sounding a bit weird to me because, like, was she still going to be red like Knuckles and the dress would also be red?
Yeah, that would be weird. I don't know.
I'm not quite picturing like an Ada Wong type thing at this point.
No, but... well, now I'm just imagining Knuckles dressed like Amy.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, but maybe with even less detail, you know?
Well, yeah.
Like Amy's dress has a nice silhouette. I don't know if there would have been as much thought put into it.
Probably not.
And, you know, you can kind of see when Spaz draws Julie Sue, there's usually a lot more detail on the cybernetics.
Yep.
But.
this story leans way into the anime aesthetic, though.
Mm-hmm.
A bit more than some others.
I feel like he liked to get a bit more experimental.
Yeah.
With stuff. I mean, he does have a recognizable style, but I feel like he also would like to just kind of, you know, wing it and kind of do whatever he wanted at the time.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like the way he's drawing Julie Sue in this story, to me, doesn't quite match the way he drew her on the cover.
No.
And I think that was just, you know, here's how I felt like drawing her. Whereas, like, you know, on some of the Mobius 25 years later covers, she's basically got like human anatomy.
Yeah.
And then there's other ones where she's basically got like a peanut body. You know?
Yeah.
So I think there's not necessarily something wrong with that per se. It's just a quirk, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. This was before the time where they were more consistently following kind of the house style of Sonic characters. Yeah. So
it was very much, you know, here's the characters, here's basically what they look like. If you don't know what they look like, here's another issue to look at as a reference and hope you get some of that down.
And if
you didn't know any better, then too bad.
And make it up as you go.
But that's, you know, about the art in terms of Julie Sue's character. So for those who don't know any further, Julie Sue is basically introduced as a soldier who defected from the Dark Legion, the cyborg echidna terrorist fascist Nazi group.
Sure.
whatever role they had to serve as being antagonists at the time.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't, you know, she was basically introduced right as she was defecting. She didn't exist prior to that. There wasn't really much of an, you know, like enemies to lovers thing. She was introduced to be Knuckles' girlfriend.
Yeah.
From the get-go.
Yeah.
And this is where the whole soul touch thing came from, where the idea was eventually thrown in that the echidnas are so advanced and rational minded that they need some kind of magical inner sense to help them fall in love. There is absolutely nothing narrative wise that actually supports this. None of them act like Vulcans or something, but.
Oh, was that the inspiration? You know, I guess that tracks.
That's a comparison I'm making. I don't know if that's a direct inspiration, but you know, that's how it's presented.
Right.
But you never really see anything.
Well, we do know that this writer has a penchant for Star Trek, so, you know, not surprise me.
You see that, and, you know, there's at least one reference in here.
Uh-huh.
But we'll get to that. But anyway, it's also kind of funny, because, like, when Julie Sue first shows up, she is, like, very antagonistic towards Knuckles not necessarily towards him personally, though, towards men in general.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's always turning down help or getting indignant over being offered support or having things suggested or pretty much anything because a man is suggesting it.
Mm-hmm.
And I bring that up mostly because this is very much a prominent driving force in her like first two issues, maybe, appearance. And then it never shows up as a factor again.
Right.
And it's also a little weird because here, especially when you get into her backstory, there's not really a whole lot to support why she would behave like that. I mean, even if you want to go and say, oh, like general patriarchy or something, it's, I don't know if it's supposed to be some attempt at, you know, strong female character,
mm-hmm.
because she hates men, but she usually is given very little actual basis for it.
Right.
You know, it's almost like a guy says, the sky is blue. Oh, you men always think you know everything about the sky. Where did this come from? Who? Okay. That's. On the other hand, you could also argue that she almost had a, you know, personality at this point. And
yeah. Yeah. And then that went away.
Mm-hmm. She basically shows up, you know, she's split away from the Dark Legion because she absolutely had to find Knuckles. The idea is that she saw him once, retroactively, off screen, whatever,
mm-hmm.
And became obsessed with the idea of finding him again, supposedly because of Soul Touch. We don't really see how this, you know, affects Knuckles, because why would we? We don't see, you know, it's kind of one-sided obsession from his point of view, but repeatedly she is presented as, oh, I really want to be with you. I don't know why. I just wish I knew why. I understood why.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of how far she goes. She doesn't have much of a reason for defecting from the Dark Legion. Nothing personal there. Nothing about her role. Nothing about the army itself or the people within it, which I'm bringing up as a factor now because this is the story where you would expect to kind of deal with this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, at best, she kind of brings up a point where she's like, oh, it felt like someone was, like, forcing their will over mine. Which, I'm sorry, but you're a soldier.
Yeah.
In the army.
Yeah.
That's kind of, you know, par for the course there. But also, you know, you left because of some random inner voice telling you what to do with no real input from yourself. So if you were concerned about some kind of weird thing pushing your will.
Left because of a man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This isn't much better. But anyway, she just kind of gets, you know, crammed along with the chaotics and sort of just integrates with the group and awkwardly becomes the thing with Knuckles because they have to continue the generation of clone guardians.
Of course.
Ultimately, that's the reason. You know, we need another egg maiden. So,
mm-hmm.
Getting along this, though, this story is introduced as the idea that Jilisu has decided that she can no longer stand it. She has to know about her past, which would be, you know, kind of a great opening, except this has never been a driving force for her at all up to this point.
Right.
Really? Like, there had been one offhand mention in another story, which basically served as a starting point that led into something else and ended up being completely forgotten anyway and never touched upon again.
Mm-hmm. That happens a lot.
But also,
at this time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But also, on top of that, if it was relevant and it was the kind of thing that, you know, she would maybe be really concerned about, this story is just going to kind of really raise questions about what was she concerned about and what was she dwelling on, but we'll get to that.
Okay.
So here she is. She's introduced riding her sky cycle, which is kind of a cool accessory for her character, I think.
Yeah.
The only thing is that usually otherwise she is shown riding the whole streaking Pasha not horse,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know,
not nearly as cool.
Well, that. And it's also, you know, something Ken says is an original invention of his own, even though it's one-to-one right out of Thundar the Barbarian. But, you know, now, I don't know. I don't know if this is just something that Spaz designed and really wanted to use. And you know what? Fine. Just roll with it or hover with it as it may be, because it's like, where?
It's cool, but it's like, where did it come from?
It's cool, but where did it come from? Because now she's, you know, the whole Dark Legion Echinopolis conflict is supposed to stem from the idea of the society has rejected technology.
Right.
She didn't haul this thing with her when she left the Dark Legion. Where is she parking this? Where is she?
Where did it come from? And where did it go?
The society has rejected technology, and she didn't, you know, drag this bike with her when she left the Dark Legion.
Uh-huh.
Then where did it come from?
Yeah. And where did it
go? Where did she park this thing?
Yeah.
We're only one panel. We're one panel.
And there's 11 pages. This is the longest story in this book.
Gee, no favoritism here.
No, of course not.
Or maybe there just wasn't enough with our character to go anywhere so far that... I would say that if it... Okay, no, I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she decides that, you know, she has to look into her past, so the best place to start is the place she once called home.
Mm-hmm.
So she's going back to the Stark Legion base. And once again, I'm sorry that I have to go on another tangent here. This place makes no damn sense. This place makes no sense at all.
It's in pieces. It's falling apart.
Okay, this place also has no structural integrity, but not my point.
Okay.
So, you know, Julie Sue points out, she says, I bet no one's been here since Knuckles fought Kragok, which was basically the original Knuckles, or the first, like, Knuckles miniseries, where the Dark Legion first emerges, and they don't really do anything. Basically, the Chaotix sneak into this base. Knuckles punches Kragok during a speech. That he and his friends conveniently don't die because Locke puts on, you know, cheat codes, so guns don't work.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kragok's like, well, fine, and hits the self-destruct button and leaves.
Okay, so this is supposed to be that same base? All right.
I mean, that's what she says. She says no one's been here since Knuckles fought Kragok.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Okay, so here's my issue with this. The Dark Legion was banished centuries ago.
Right.
To some pocket dimension. You know, they basically, Echidnopolis said, we don't want technology anymore because we're going to skip the parts of actually, you know, understanding where we went wrong as a society and just say technology is the problem.
Right.
A bunch of people disagreed with that, put on cult robes and started plotting a takeover or something. And for their trouble, got yeeted into a pocket dimension where things just kind of float around. It's very vague.
Mm-hmm.
When they emerge, they're supposed to have emerged here and there at different times in the past, but when they've most recently emerged and they all go to assemble at this hidden base, Knuckles and friends are kind of going, how is there this huge base here, you know, hidden underground on the island, supposedly, that they didn't know about? And Locke, creepily watching from the corners like he always is, says it was built a long, long time ago. So presumably during their initial, you know, cult startup days, they built this giant underground base and then got yeeted into another dimension.
Hmm.
So one, if this dimension existed on Angel Island this whole time, it shouldn't be littered with statues of Enerjack.
Mm-hmm.
Because they never saw him like this. He never emerged in that form.
Right.
Until much later. But two, how did Julie Sue grow up here in this base?
Good question.
How was she living and their entire army operating from this base if it was built on the island ages ago and supposedly hidden there all this time?
It doesn't make sense. I'm confused.
like this is what the story presents.
Right. Yes.
So off to a good start, right?
Sure.
It's even more annoying because someone mentions an airlock later on. What airlock? Are they supposed to be talking about the Twilight Zone? Where they were presumably in a ship that they maybe built after being thrown into the pocket dimension? So, nothing about their situation makes any sense.
No. Why would it?
Okay. Well, point is, Jilly Sue returns to the base that she grew up in, despite that not making any sense, that's littered with anachronistic statues,
mm-hmm.
to discover things about her past. So she starts looking around and reminiscing about her old room and things in a sort of very exposition heavy way without really reflecting on it personally.
Right. Yeah.
Just, you know, oh, here's my old room and we used to go like this, you know.
Cool.
We'd have 6 hours of sleep and then wake up every morning for a sonic shower, which I'm pretty sure is a Star Trek thing.
I don't want to shower in sonic. Please, no.
Regardless. That's what I was saying earlier when I said there was a Star Trek
right.
nod.
Mm-hmm.
And then she would dress and begin her day. You know, highly original.
Wow.
So
I'm enthralled.
Mm-hmm. So she goes on and basically reflects on how it seemed like Craig Ock and his second in command, who everyone referred to as Commissar, were always watching her for some reason.
Creepy.
Anyway, she goes on to reminisce briefly around the premises a bit and then talks about hearing some noises and seeing lights and stuff, which just kind of goes on for a while. Takes up a whole lot of space that doesn't really seem to accomplish a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
There's this one panel that I don't know, I've never really been able to understand, where she talks about activating a security shield, and it kind of makes it sound like she says she's got this, you know, she's got like the wind knocked out of her sort of thing, but it looks like she's like dodging and getting ready to take aim at someone.
Right.
It's weird. I don't know. Point is, she wanders around a bit and then finds an old cyborg echidna melting in the corner. Points her weapon at him and is like, yeah, hold it right there, because she's a cop. No, she's not. But anyway, points a gun at him and he doesn't care, because he's just like, oh my gosh, it's Jilly Sue.
Wow.
And he's just like, oh, you don't remember me, huh? You know, I'm Simon.
Who?
You know, Simon.
John Simon?
And at least I will say that I think Spaz, you know, tried to vary up the echidna face shape a bit, but I think the colorist kind of missed a bit of how they were trying to render the face shape a little. Maybe. Wrong, but I don't know. I think it ends up kind of making him look like a disintegrating dog.
I was going to say, he looks a bit more dog-like than echidna-like.
I think part of what is supposed to be sagging cheeks just kind of turned into eye bags.
Yeah.
But anyway, Simon shows up and says, oh, you don't remember me. Then he goes, but I'm not surprised if you don't remember me. I didn't have as much contact with you as my darling wife did. And I don't know how to pronounce this name. Is it Florenka? Florenza? Florence and the Machine?
Florenka. That's how I'd go with it, but
Flamenco?
Yeah, maybe.
It's just the way the hyphening breaks it up kind of makes it seem like, is it supposed to be like a hard, you know, K sound or a, I guess, Florenka. I don't know. It's a little funny.
Floriner. I don't know.
Yeah. Floriner. But anyway, he's like, oh, you know, well, you wouldn't remember me necessarily because, you know, my wife knew you better. And, you know, Craig Ock saw to all this and she's like, oh, you know me? He's like, oh, sure, ever since you were an infant. And once we learned that you had returned, which sounds kind of vague.
Right.
We, you know, wanted to try to meet up with you. And it's like, I guess, returned from where? Returned to this base as of today? What? I don't know.
Somehow, it's kind of weird. Somehow Jilly Sue returned.
Jilly Sue returned. So at least Jilly Sue starts off a bit reasonably and says, okay, how do I know you're telling the truth? And he's like, yeah, that's fair. That's about the most reasonable exchange we're going to have throughout this whole thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because first, you know, he opens up with yet another bit of, I guess, species essentialism or whatever. He says, oh, of course, you know, we echidnas are a private people, and we don't discuss personal matters with others.
All of them?
Yeah, all of them.
That's a lot.
This is why they need the soul touch, apparently.
This is a the bold assumption.
Yeah. He says, we just want to, you know, talk with the daughter that we raised, you know, blah, blah, blah. Or at least, you know, we raise her like our own daughter.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, you know, what, you mean you're my father? He's like, no, but I might as well be. Because, you know, you gotta mislead this as much as possible and make it as dramatic.
Did she have amnesia and just forget this, or?
Well, here's, okay. we'll get to that.
Well, I know I think it's in the story, but I don't.
Yes, it is, but this is where it just turns into Simon exposition dumping at her for like two pages.
Yeah, basically mansplaining her origin to her, yes.
Yep. So basically, he explains to her that Luger, who was the former commander of the Dark Legion, married the fair Merinda and had, you know, the twin nightmare jerkasses, Kragok and Leanda.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, Merinda went and died, you know, kind of War of the Worlds style by stepping onto normal Mobius and just kind of going, oh, I think I have a fever. Because, you know, she was no longer plot relevant.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes in these things.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, so first wife is dead. A few years later, and Luger remarries wife number two, who is the fair Mary Sue. Two things. One, I honestly don't think that Ken intentionally named her Mary Sue as some kind of self-aware trope, despite what some people think.
No, that doesn't sound likely entirely.
I think it's literally that, you know, Julie Sue's name was already there and he just needed something that sounded like it fit, but her name just happened to be Mary Sue.
Yeah.
But it does bother me that, you know, again, this is egg maiden syndrome. These are wives introduced to serve the role of wife and mother.
Yeah.
And then they're entirely disposable to the plot, pretty much.
Yeah, they serve their purpose, their breeding purpose, and then they're done.
Yep. To the point that Simon describes them literally exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Luger married the fair blah, 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 and then she died. So then he married the fair blah, blah, blah. Okay, great, wonderful.
Cool.
I'm glad she has so much to her. It's just a tad disappointing there.
A tad.
Well, now,
sure.
One thing I think is at least a little bit, I don't want to go so far as to call it a character trait because it's not that. And I think this is entirely Spaz's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's one of the few artists. One, I think he gave this detail to Julie Sue in the first place that most artists, you know, just didn't bother using because she's very detailed when he draws her.
Right.
Is he draws this kind of like little leg band on Julie Sue.
Yep, I see that.
And he gave Mary Sue the same band.
Okay.
So I wonder if he kind of intended that to be sort of like a little inherited, you know, bit of jewelry or something.
Or at least some kind of design thing that ties them together.
Yeah, at least something.
Right.
But beyond that, Mary Sue has two lines of dialogue that are pretty generic, and then dies.
Yeah. It's funny that she's called Mary Sue, but she's not really a Mary Sue. She's just a plot device.
Pretty much. And, you know, so yeah, Mary Sue is no longer needed, so the story kills her off. And Luger, you know, he apparently has no idea how to raise children, despite being on his third one. So he just kind of off-handed Julie Sue to Florinka, who was some random legioner, I guess.
Sure.
At this point, Kragok and Leanda were already in their teens, so I guess they're self-sufficient. And also, they hated having a step-sibling. They also seemingly didn't like that, you know, their father had remarried in the first place. So, yeah, so Luger just kind of said, I don't know what to do with this other kid. Random soldier, you take her.
Yeah.
And then Luger just randomly disappears, also from the plot,
Yeah, I don't need him.
There's some implications that maybe Kragok had something to do with it, but in universe, this is no one cared, really. Kragok took over, and Luger's gone. So the parents served their purpose, and they're all gone. Now, here's the part where it gets kind of stupid.
Oh.
Actually, no. I'm sorry. We've already gone way past that part.
I was going to say.
Here's the part where it gets very stupid.
Okay.
Anyway, Simon says that since, you know, they were now in power, and Kragok and Leander apparently wanted absolutely nothing to do with their younger half-sister.
Uh-huh.
They activated a memory neutralizing chip that every Dark Legionnaire basically comes standard with as part of their cybernetics.
How convenient.
So, Julius's memories are wiped.
Okay.
Lorinka is told that, as of this point, Julius is an orphan, and that's how she's supposed to treat her, and they don't know who her parents are, and you better keep it that way.
Okay.
Simon also assumes that Kragok tried to put him in dangerous situations, hoping he would just kind of die, I guess, because, you know, their situation that they had arranged themselves wasn't good enough anyway. So, eventually, they took Julie Sue away, and then, this is the phrasing, it says, performed a mind wipe. So, is this different than the memory neutralizing chip, or is this...
Does this go together? Are these things related?
I don't know. Did he forget that he wrote this a page earlier?
Possibly.
Yeah, so, they did a memory neutralizing chip activation, and then a mind wipe on her. So, presumably, Julie Sue should only have about like 2 years worth of life experience.
And I guess it depends on what they erased.
Well, it's kind of left her back. I mean, she even says to Simon, well, okay, how come I don't remember any of this, especially Florin? Because he just told you, you keep having your mind erased.
Yeah.
Like, you keep having your brain erased.
Well, your brain's fried, man. It's gone for good.
And that's the thing is that, like, I don't know. It just bugged me that he mentions this memory erasure chip and then talks about a mind wipe. And it's like, are these separate things or not?
Yeah.
Did they just turn the chip on again? What are you doing? And then why is Julius listening to this and going, okay, so how come I don't remember?
It's because her mind's been cooked, man. Julie Sue is cooked.
Knuckles gets microwaved and she gets cooked.
Yeah, basically.
Oh, they really are made for each other.
Her brain is turned to mush. It's just nothing there.
It's scrambled eggs.
Head empty.
Head empty. And that's the thing, too, is like this... This has never affected her character in the least.
No.
Like, she opens up this story, even, talking about how she has to find out about her past. What past? What do you know about yourself?
Right.
Have you never noticed that you don't have any memories, like, before age 13 or so? Or that there are massive gaps in your brain, or anything?
I mean, that could have been interesting if they had kind of, like, built up to it. Like, if, you know...
Yeah.
If they brought it up before, maybe if she'd been like, I don't remember. That's so, why wouldn't I remember? Why don't I remember this? Things like that, you know?
How come I have no connection to these things? How come this seems to, you know, this is meaningless to me? Oh, I don't know my parents because there's foreshadowing to make things interesting.
Yeah, no, instead it just comes up out of nowhere. And then is never brought up again, really.
Well, yeah, it's never brought up again.
Not really, no.
And on top of all that, this is the guy who's just telling her now that her memory's been erased at least twice. He started this whole conversation with, oh, you don't remember me, do you? Well, that's because you spent more time with my wife instead of me, right? Buddy! Who else got mind wiped here? Because I'm starting to question his memory.
I'm thinking everybody is getting mind wiped.
Yeah, right?
I want to get mind wiped after reading this.
Oh, boy. And I think even worse, on top of all this, Julie Sue doesn't react to any of this.
Not really.
She basically asks him, you know, how do I know you're telling the truth at the start? And then he goes through all this and says, you know, after, you know, things with the Dark Legion just kept going nuts, and we decided things were going bad. We apparently abandoned you and just ran off to the floating island, and then decided to come back to this base and collect quote-unquote evidence for you in case you showed up again, I guess.
Evidence of what?
I guess of who she is or something.
Okay.
So we can prove who, I don't know.
But he doesn't actually produce any of that evidence. He just tells her.
Yeah.
It's like, is it, what?
But also,
okay.
I mean, if they're so, you know, oh, her memory's been erased twice. Anyway, let's run away while we have the chance.
Yeah.
And hopefully, but yeah, she doesn't really, you know, react to any of this. She's not shocked or horrified or upset. And here's a big thing that's really important is, both to the readers, but also to the character, she's just been told that she's directly related to Kragok and Leanda.
Mm-hmm.
No reaction. No comment on this.
Yeah, she just doesn't care.
Doesn't even acknowledge it.
No.
So, you know, she's barely a character in her own story here.
Mm-hmm.
This is just an exposition puppet for the sake of this greater Echidna narrative. And the thing is, like, for newer readers, or, you know, readers who go over the stuff, I guess, kind of retroactively, as opposed to those who are reading this as it came out,
right,
you know, they kind of look at this and are like, oh, this is Julie Sue, you know, she's Leanda's half sister, and they have this whole dramatic beef over that because Kragok's already dead, and, you know, that's part of their defining character. And also, blah, 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 she's technically related to Knuckles.
I'm trying to think of it. It's funny having a, like, a 30-something-year-old having beef with someone who's, like, 15.
Yeah, right?
With,
yeah.
Leanda, she's like between Leanda and Julie Sue. It's like,
God, what is she, like, 32 compared, like, to
yeah, yeah,
her 15-year-old half-sister?
Yeah, yeah, half her age. And it's like, what? What happened? Wow. Are you so mad?
But yeah, you know, but here's the thing, this was all brand new at this point.
Right.
This had not been a thing before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you basically had Kragok was the big bad of the Dark Legion, and Julie Sue was there, but there was zero indication that they had any history with each other.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, there wasn't any kind of, like, you know, hint or teasing or foreshadowing that they were anything more than, you know, the commander and a soldier.
Basically, yeah.
There was nothing to, and then, you know, Kragok's gone. And then when Leanda was introduced, I mean, never mind, she didn't even have a name at first.
Mm-hmm.
But he also had the kind of wonkiness where, I think she, like, towards the later part of her introduction, calls Moratori Rex grandfather. Which was also a bit wonky because before he became a windshield decoration, Kragok had repeatedly called Moratori Rex his father. So, you know, trying to go forward with this is, like, all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, what is this, you know, family? What are these family ties being related? It's like, okay, wait, so going back, it's like retroactively, okay, so this new Leanda chick is supposed to be Kragok's sister. And this is the first story that actually confirmed that they were twin siblings.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Because they never had a chance to be on page together and interacting together. Because she was introduced after he was gone.
Gone, yeah.
So, yeah, that was already kind of weird. And, again, some people, you know, they only kind of come in here, oh, here's, you know, Julie Sue, Knuckles is dating his cousin, Alabama, blah, 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 blah. It's... It is awkward when you know, kind of have, here's the big Knuckles family wreath.
Yeah, basically, and yeah.
It's a big wreath,
it is. Yeah.
It's a big loop.
Yes.
I mean, you know, Street Fighter's having their own moment with that kind of thing right now.
Right. They didn't think about that at the time, and they kind of screwed it up, and it's like, whoops, okay.
Maybe it's not a thing. And I think, again, some readers don't know because of, they introduce these kind of, like, sci-fi concepts. So basically that the Dark Legion was in this, like, time distorted dimension for most of their existence, that their branch of the family basically existed sort of like a quarter of the time Knuckles' side of the family did.
Mm-hmm.
So when you really get down to it, yeah, like they're so distantly related, it doesn't really matter. It's not.
Yeah, yeah, they're really like it's 17 times removed cousins. It's like,
yeah, of course, it's, you know, weird space time nonsense on top of that.
Yeah,
it really doesn't matter. The thing is, it makes it more awkward when these characters have all these distant even relationships and it's constantly reinforced across them.
Mm-hmm.
When you have to sit there and say, okay, wait, these characters who are, you know, cousins or half siblings or whatnot with each other or possibly dating each other are calling the same figures grandfather or great uncle or whatever. It's like, you're not making things more clear.
This is the problem you run into when you try to make everybody related to each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it really doesn't do anything for Julie Sue's character per se.
I don't think it does anything for anybody.
Like, okay, you were directly related to the leadership of your cult. You know, the commander that you used to report to and personally drive around and directly betrayed and got arrested. That was your, half brother all along.
Yeah.
And he erased your memories twice. Yeah, what do I do now, though? Nothing, I guess, you know?
Why would you?
Like, if you want to argue that the character conflicts between Leander and Julie Sue that developed later on at least gave them something,
mm-hmm.
that's fine. But that's, again, another case of other writers taking what was there and building on it.
Right. Actually doing something with it.
Yeah. Like, here's the thing. There's one part later on where the Dark Legion decides they have to kidnap Julie Sue away from one of their, basically to keep her out of the way of one of their big plans. It doesn't really matter. There's a lot to be said there. It's stupid. But, you know, Leander is complaining about it. And initially, Ken has written it that Leander is like taunting Julie Sue over their familial connection. And Julie Sue is angrily refusing to acknowledge their family. And then, like, an issue later, like, same, staging, same place, like, this is still part of the same narrative. Julie Sue is pleading for leniency on the basis, I'm your sister. And Leander turns around and is like, I'm not acknowledging you as a sister or that we're related at all.
Mm-hmm.
Their positions completely reverse. 100%. How do you go from, I can taunt you for being my little sister and blah, 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 to actually, I refuse to even acknowledge you, you dreck.
we're not related. Get out of my sight, worm.
And again, what is Julius's personality in this? She's angry and fiery about it at first, and then later, no, please have mercy on me. I'm your little boo-boo sister. a lot of the details later on that kind of tighten up and connect more of the backstory and details regarding like Kragok and Leander's kind of rise to power and the scheming with Luger and everything else was Ian's doing, because everything else was left really vague. Like, Luger literally just has a big question mark over his silhouette. What happened to him in the plot? Oh.
He's just, I don't know. I'll figure it out later.
He's gone.
It's like all the big holes in the Knuckles family tree, like family wreath.
Yeah.
It was like,
these are people we're going to introduce later. These are later.
People who are coming in later. It's like, no, they're not. You just don't know. You just don't have them.
Yeah, they're just necessary links in this genetic chain because you didn't have them decanting out of jars.
Yeah.
So there's Julie Sue discovering her past.
Yay.
She's been you could do so much with, you know, you have a chip in your brain that can erase your memories, and it's happened already. There is so much you could reflect on there. And here, she's got, you know, well, here are your, like, you know, adopted parents, the ones who raised you and who actually cared about you, ostensibly, when everyone else disappeared or abandoned you or disappeared and abandoned you.
Right.
Why? Okay. Like, Florinka maybe has two instances of dialogue, I think, beyond this story. And
I would assume that mostly, that's about right.
It's mostly to, you know, sit there and say mother things.
Thinking about her, I'm like, she never really played a factor or showed up at all again.
I mean, why
really?
Does Simon need to exist?
Yeah, basically.
Why couldn't it have been the mother figure this whole time?
Yeah.
This is supposed to be a, you know, special celebrating female characters.
Yeah.
Maybe instead of just having a bunch of disposable mothers, the fair blankety blank who married, gave birth, and then
died,
dropped dead to clear the way for whatever else needed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have Luger handing Julisu off to, I guess, the first female legionnaire he knew, because, you know, you gotta have the mother figure to look after the baby.
Yeah, why couldn't she figure it out on her own? Like, why isn't there, like, she could go back to this base and figure out things on her own and then realize her mind had been wiped or whatever, and she didn't need someone to tell her, necessarily. There are ways you could have done it where it's like, you know, she actually does something and learns things in a self-sufficient manner and react to it, yes, rather than just be like get the story told at her.
She showed more rage at the time Knuckles disappeared without question.
Uh-huh.
You know, because he happened to see his disappeared father.
Yeah, yeah.
And ran off to find him, and she tried, you know, she ran out later a bit too late and couldn't figure out where he went, and this was apparently enough to lead to her taking photos of him to shoot in a warehouse while screaming.
Like, you think she would be pretty mad about having her mind wiped.
You know, by the head of the cult.
Kind of upset about that.
Who she just personally...
just a thought.
You know, tried to betray and get arrested and all... Nah.
Nah.
Whatever. It's okay. In the future, she and Lee and I will be bestest buddies and have video calls while prepping dinner.
Uh-huh.
Because family means... you forgive little things like attempted murder. Because apparently...
you must sacrifice yourself for your family.
Well, no, I was going to say, I think Ken's actual phrasing on the matter was, you know, they're not petty, so they got over it.
Really? Lee and Da's not petty?
No, Julie Sue.
Julie Sue is not petty, maybe, but Lee and Da is not petty?
I think it's a little more likely that maybe, I don't know, maybe her memory got erased a third friggin' time by the time they got to 25 years later.
Knowing Lee and Da is like one of the most pettiest people in this freaking book. Knowing what I know about her, it's like, nah. She's got beef with her 15-year-old. I don't know. She's literally the pettiest person.
I just remember that one panel where some guy, like, they're just like trashing the street, and some guy is like, why are you doing this, leave us alone, and she's like, how dare you talk back to me, beat this guy senseless.
Yeah. Yeah.
beat him senselessly. Which is kind of funnier.
Beat him senselessly. What? Grammar.
It's like, well, we're already trashing the place senselessly.
So. Yeah, yeah. All right.
Oh, Lord. Yeesh. Well, that's enough of Julie Sue.
Yeah.
Having her backstory talked at her.
Yeah, yeah. Let's move on to another story where nothing happens.
Oh boy. Are we ready? Is everyone ready for Sally Acorn in Ascension?
No, but let's do it anyway. AKA, AKA open up the first page and...
the golden goo!
The golden goo pool, yep. Go for a swim.
I guess an important thing to start with is, depending on which version you're reading,
uh-huh.
Sally is either slightly more naked than usual, or she's had her vest awkwardly edited on to every panel.
Really? Oh. All right. Well, I'm looking at the original version, clearly, so...
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well...
It's kind of funny because, okay, it's, you know, it's almost like Donald Duck logic. Like, he doesn't wear pants.
Yeah.
But when he gets out of the shower, he has to wrap a towel around.
Yeah, yeah. And originally, Sally did not have the vest, so.
No. She basically had boots.
That's it. Basically, she had the same outfit Sonic wears, but, you know.
Yeah. I think part of, I don't know, honestly, personally, how much of an issue there actually was. If, you know, if there really was much. But I know there was some, what's the phrasing I want here? I guess some people saying that, like, some of the artwork was a little awkwardly detailed, I guess.
Yeah.
It's kind of a bit in that sort of awkward halfway zone where it's like, how much anatomy is too much anatomy for a Sonic character?
Right.
You know, do we have rubber hose limbs or... You know, but so the idea was, or the decision was made to put her vest back on so you can't see her scandalous back.
I guess. She's still not wearing pants, though, but, you know.
I know.
She wouldn't wear those until much, much later. So.
Or her boots here, too, which is kind
of...
It's also kind of funny because in some of the edits, you can really see where her vest is like edited around the details because it's like very flat kind of colored and the golden goo stuff is not touching it at all.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like drawn under it and around it. And then when things are colored in like monochrome, the vest is still blue.
Right. Which is funny.
It's funny. It's so funny, I forgot to laugh.
Anyway.
I mean, some people were like, oh my god, the controversy, how dare you censor? I don't care. I'm not here for this, okay?
Nah.
Anyway. So, the theme of this story, according to its author, is independence.
Oh, okay.
Something Sally is... often noted to completely friggin' lack throughout this series.
Uh-huh.
The art is by Jim Valentino, who some people might be familiar with.
Did he do Sonic stories before?
I think he did one or two.
Okay. I guess he's...
Didn't he do the crossover?
He's Guardians of the Galaxy artist.
Well, yeah, that was, like, from the Image crossover, basically.
I think that's it, yeah.
And I think he was basically like he had a family member who was a Sonic fan too, and
mm-hmm.
basically kind of made some connections through there. But some panels are serviceable, others are a little rougher.
Right.
There's at least one instance, though I think there might be a couple more. Maybe it's just the one of Spaz sneaking in to draw something.
In this story?
In this story, yeah.
Okay. Yep.
So anyway.
There's one panel that I really like. But.
You say like.
I like because.
Is it the one with the Freedom Fighters?
Maybe.
everyone Sally knows and loves. And they look like low budget. Copied art you'd find on some kind of daycare window frame.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I like that. It's not good. But I like it because it's funny. It's like, why do they look like this? I'm guessing they weren't originally there and they had to add them in at like the last second. Who knows?
I do kind of wonder because I don't know.
Is this the first instance of many hands? Uncredited many hands?
Oh, Lord.
Oh, no.
I mean, is it many hands or is it like
one really
finger paint?
One really janky hand.
My left hand. Because I'm on the phone and the editor's screaming at me.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Theme is independence.
Uh-huh. Sure.
So anyway, building up to this point, a lot of stories about Sally, especially written by Ken, kind of focus on the idea that she was being kept out of the loop on things. You know, her father wasn't telling her things. What little authority she has was undermined and ignored, often by one Jeffrey St. John. You know, There was a whole lot of, oh, she doesn't know any better because things are being planned around her and have been planned since she was born and blah, 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 and all this kind of predetermined crap that all these characters with no agency get to deal with.
She's in line for ascension, or it's the prophecy, or blah, blah.
Yeah. Well, along that line, so there's the whole source of all thing, which, contrary to popular belief, was not a ripoff of the Force, but was a ripoff of Jack Kirby's The Source.
I was going to say, yeah.
It would not be a ripoff of Star Wars. Come on.
No. Jack Kirby, yes. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Not Star Wars.
And that's not speculation. That's not speculation. This is confirmed.
Right.
Anyway, which is basically supposed to be this golden magical goo that the royal family has had access to for reasons. And despite numerous inconsistencies and retcons and this and that, it's supposed to be kind of a traditional part, I guess, of their ascension rituals. Basically shown that King Acorn took a dip and then they used some of the goo to make his crown and sword. So despite them having earlier stories about having to find, you know, the traditional royal crown and sword of acorns, apparently he had a new one made for himself. So I don't know. But King Acorn had talked about how he is fully bonded and one with the source of all. And this allows him to see the future and know everything and a bunch of other convenient bullcrap.
Right.
And earlier on, he had told Sally that the source had revealed to him that she would marry Antoine. He would be her future husband and, you know, screw that Sonic guy because, oh my gosh, how dramatic.
Gosh.
She can't have the one she loves. And, you know, There Sally thinks she have a choice in her own life.
Silly.
And if you think this was meant to be a long-term foreshadowing to the Antoine / Patch plot point, no, it wasn't, because that was never planned.
Why would it be? It's much easier just to retcon it.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, Sally wasn't happy with this. She wasn't happy with, you know, Jeffrey saying, I don't have to answer to you, blah, blah, blah. I just want to, kiss you. You know, and other things. And yeah. Mm. And all this, and, you know, King Acorn was going like, gee, Sally sure is stubborn, wanting to have self-determination and her own life and all this. You know, and he even said that, like, you know, if she didn't fall in line, I'll have to see if my other option is still available, by which he meant Prince Elias.
Yes.
You know, so he told St. John that his mission was to finally check up on what happened to Queen Alicia, who went missing way in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But this was literally him just kind of going, you know, I need to see if I still have a spare heir. Because this one's not really listening to me the way I want.
Right.
But, you know, Jeffrey came back with the comatose queen because, you know, again, you can't have a wife with too much character.
No. Put her to sleep. Then you don't have to worry about writing her.
Yeah. Literally put her on ice.
Uh-huh.
Put her in the fridge. Anyway, and then also brought back Elias, who, however, you know, despite being older than Sally, was not really raised to be a ruler. Yeah, whereas Sally, it's kind of reinforced the idea that despite all the, you know, coups and war and disruptions in her life. So presumably most of this kind of happened before she was like five. She was raised to be a ruler.
Right.
We'll just roll with that. Ignore everything that happened.
Sure.
But, you know, she was basically told, and as far as everyone knew, she would be the queen. So this is kind of reinforced that there's a theme of choices here that, you know, she figured from, as far as she knew from childhood, she was brought up that she would be the queen. But now she has this brother who's back, but he doesn't actually want to be king. And he's kind of saying, you know, if you want to be queen and you're probably more suited for it anyway, which is one of the few times that's actually kind of acknowledged, you have first dibs. That's fine.
Uh-huh.
So presumably in this story, this is her deciding to take a dunk in their magic ritual goo pool to see if this is what she really wants.
Alrighty.
It's also kind of nice because I guess Elias is presented as saying that he's going to support Sally no matter what their father may say, especially given how often you have the whole theme of, you know, father knows best, father knows everything, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'll bring up in a second, but anyway. So basically, Sally steps into the source of all and is drawn to magical light and visions of the past and flashbacks and this and that because it's exposition time.
Time
which,
for,
you know, can be a fine plot device, but
mm-hmm.
I'm just saying.
Time for a clip show. Yep.
So the first thing she sees is, you know, a little bit of flashback, or I guess she wouldn't be able to, you know, perceive this herself, so it's not like her memory, but seeing herself as a baby with her mother and Elias there as a toddler-ish thing, and, you know, her mother's just like, oh, I hope my darling daughter will never know what war is.
Uh-huh.
Because, ha-ha, irony.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know. Small note here. This is where I was saying the first panel that shows Elias, he is obviously drawn in there by Spaz.
Is he?
That is a...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
And there was a whole bunch of issues at first with how Elias was portrayed. I don't know if everyone, editors, Ken himself, despite being the one who was writing this whole timeline, if they all weren't paying much attention. But, you know, the whole point is that Elias is older than Sally and therefore would have dibs on the throne.
Right.
And when they first showed him in the Angel Island stuff, he was drawn pretty much as like a baby or like a little younger. And the text even said baby. And people were like, that doesn't make any sense. You know?
Right.
He can't be a baby if Sally's a baby.
No, not if he's supposed to be slightly like, oh, older.
Yeah. He's supposed to be, you know, a few years older.
Right.
So, and they were like, oh yeah, we goofed. He should be a toddler there at least. And so you see, you know, in other art here, I guess maybe there was some issue with how he looked. And I wonder if they had to kind of fill him in the background a bit here.
Mm-hmm.
Or remember he existed. I don't know. But it's also kind of funny because along that line, you know, with the ages being all over the place is when they do so show some of the stuff is that Geoffrey St. John is also supposed to be older than Elias.
Right. Which means he's so, quite a bit older than Sally.
Yeah. Which means, like, you know, the idea that he's, like, you know, 20 when she's 16 is impossible. For one thing, at the start of the, you know, story, Sally was 15, not 16.
Right.
When Geoffrey is spending all his time hitting on her.
Mm.
And also, you know, around that point, Elias would have been, I think it's like 19 to 20. So Geoffrey's already older than that by a little bit.
Yeah.
At least. You can even see him in some pages here and there. He was already a kid because he was learning from his dad who died when Elias was a toddler.
Yeah. He's probably like a good 5 or 6 years older at least.
Than that point, yeah.
Than Sally, yeah.
Oopsie peepsie.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's another small thing that bugs me, though, is that whenever they have some of these moments of flashbacks, like they did it with Sonic Kids stories and stuff, is that they have, you know, these scenes in the past that are basically there for the characters to make ironic remarks so the audience can kind of go, up, we know that's not true. We know this doesn't happen. We know what this means in the future. And right. It's like, okay, so the characters don't remember this, or they like this never, you know, means anything to them really retroactively. It's just kind of like, it's just there to be a really obnoxious kind of wink nod at the audience. And it's like, okay.
All right.
That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
It's annoying. But anyway, Sally sees her mom and is sad, and then has another memory with her mentor, Julia, who I think we talked about this once before, but there was something going on with this character in terms of design and position or something, because she was either a woodchuck with a long braid or a pink cat.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty sure that there was a design that was going to be used for Sally's mom that got confused and then repurposed as her mentor, except for when she was a cat. But anyway, it doesn't matter.
Right, yeah.
Here she's the woodchuck version.
Yeah.
So,
and Rosie's cousin, I guess, because they forgot Rosie existed.
Yeah, well.
Something like that.
She was just a babysitter, so she couldn't be this mentor.
Oh, okay.
Or tutor or whatever.
Oh, okay.
There were notes from way back when they were introducing this character, and I'm not getting into all this now. We're getting very sidetracked again. We're like 3 pages.
This is the problem you have when you have so many freaking characters. How do you keep track of them all? You don't.
And especially when you could just do more with what you have.
Right.
Instead of introducing a new one for every slight purpose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But anyway. So Sally's reminiscing about this time with her mentor, and they're reflecting on the then war that, you know, Sally's mom totally hoped that her daughter would never have to experience. And this is the war with the Overlanders, which were basically, you know, the anime humans. I know a lot of people try to think there was like a big dramatic distinction. Oh, they were meant to be like Mobian humans. They're not really humans. They're special ones with these features. And it's like, this was just retconning to explain some art inconsistencies and do some world building.
Basically,
it wasn't that big a deal. They're humans, okay, guys? They're humans.
Pretty much.
As much as this is short, the sequence does bug me because, you know, Sally's concerned that the war won't end, and Julia basically says, well, this depends on whether or not her dad can reason with the Overlanders. And Sally's like, I don't understand why living creatures would hurt each other. And Julia decides to reframe the war by comparing it to a natural predator attacking and eating a prey animal.
Uh-huh.
Which, she's a terrible teacher.
Yeah.
She's a terrible teacher, or else she has some really problematic prejudices that she is not exploring here or addressing.
Mm-hmm. I also just want to call out the name of this cat creature, bush femur.
Yeah, why is it a femur?
Why is it a femur?
It's
yeah.
It's in a tree.
It's not a bone. It's a cat.
And it's not in a bush.
Yeah. Yeah. It's in a tree. It's not in a bush. Like, why is and it it's not a bone. It's a cat. I can see if it being, they called it like a bush lemur, maybe, but even then, that's not right. But at least it's still, at least it's an animal.
I don't know.
Not a bush femur. What?
Just kind of, you know, shook the dictionary around and some words fell out.
Basically, yes.
But yeah, she basically, you know, says, look, here's a angry predator animal eating another one. And Sally's like, oh my God, that's gross. And Julia's like, yeah, but that's nature.
Uh-huh.
And Sally's like, teacher, I really don't think this is an apt comparison. And she's like, sure it is. We're the prey animals.
Uh-huh.
And we're totally going to get consumed and eaten alive if we don't fight back. So, you know, this entire conflict, all this war, has nothing to do with, like, resources or beliefs or history. It's just, I guess, more species essentialism.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
They're just gonna eat us alive because it's in their nature too, and we have to fight back.
Mm-hmm.
That's concerning, but okay. So Sally's just like, I'm not sure about these lessons, but okay, I don't know why the goose showing me all this, including some very awkward pictures of my friends. We're gonna remind everybody that this is a Sonic comic book briefly.
For a second.
With a very concerning looking Amy Rose.
Amy's seen some crap.
I don't know. It's almost like Antoine is doing a version of that Sonic ice cream.
They all look like Sonic ice cream. That's what they all look like.
Oh, God. But, you know, the Cosmos decide to coalesce into King Acorn for yet another round of Father Knows Best.
Uh-huh. As he usually does in these stories.
Yes. You are experiencing the sum total of all that came before you, even things from before you were born.
Mm-hmm.
And, God damn, I hate King Acorn.
He sucks.
Sorry.
He sucks.
This basically turns into another, oh, rulers must make hard decisions, you know, blah, blah, blah. Oh, the world can be hard sometimes, and I have to make such tough and ruthless choices, and blah, and I hoped to spare you, but one of you must take my place someday, and blah, blah. And she's like, oh, yeah, how come you never even mentioned my brother?
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, valid question, especially when you come around to, you know, how come the entire kingdom managed to pretend the firstborn heir never existed in this patriarchal society?
Uh-huh.
No one remembered him ever, but okay, sure. But anyway, goo dream version Elias appears in the vision to conveniently defend dream goo version of King Acorn to say, you know, oh, King Acorn couldn't tell you what happened to him and their mother because it would just hurt her feelings. And I don't know, to me, this feels very in contrast to the real Elias,
uh-huh,
at the start of the story, which would be interesting, except it doesn't feel intentional.
Yeah. The source of all is manipulating her, trying to, it seems like, but mm-hmm, they don't really explore that.
No. In fact, Carl Ballers wanted to write the source of all as a manipulative force.
Yeah, which would make sense.
Which seemed to make sense, and that's what a lot of people assumed was kind of the point of it and the case for it, but Ken was very much against that direction.
Yeah, not surprised.
It was, you know, another case of this was not my intention and another writer is warping it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, here we have, you know, Vision Elias, who totally reassures Sally that, you know, her dad was only trying to protect her from everything somehow, despite the number of times he puts her in danger and hurts her feelings directly and stomps all over her agency.
He's basically just like a huge freaking jerk all the time.
Yeah.
To everybody.
But it's okay. Whether or not we agree with her father's decisions, his love for us is unquestionable.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Man, this sucks.
It's really frustrating because he has the one line here. He says, you know, life isn't a math equation.
Uh-huh.
Give seven individuals the same situation, you can get seven different responses. That is fair. That's, you know, a reasonable statement. But then he's like, you know, the best responses or choices or whatever come from the heart. And it's like, just, you know, this is very much like a road to hell type thing. Like, just.
Yeah.
Come on. This doesn't excuse everything. Like, intent does not erase impact. Especially when they get so blurred, it's really hard to ignore. What the hell was his intent? Oh, it's because I love you. Anyway, let's go commit genocide.
Boy, that escalated quickly.
Well, it happened, didn't it?
Uh-huh.
Just, you know. And I mean, that's... like, okay, Sally asks, you know, the source, clone, brother, whatever. Well, okay, does this mean like my father is always right? And the source, the cosmos, the everything rearranges herself as the future queen and basically tells her yes.
Yeah. Pretty much.
His phrasing is that the King Acorn is fully aware of the consequences of every action he takes, and that nothing he ever does is done lightly. How is that remotely accurate?
He makes impulse and rash decisions all the time, at least since he's come back, and probably before then, too.
If he's fully aware of the consequences of every action he takes, then he's taking a whole lot of really crappy actions.
Yeah, pretty much.
On purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
He had three praetors in his court alone.
Yeah.
Like, if you think of every single action and he's made throughout the, like, even if you think of it as, like, you know, okay, another writer wrote this, when he goes and charges off into battle leading, you know, the rescue attempt for Elias into Robotropolis, which ends up with him getting paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew this would happen?
Yeah, well, the source of all shows him the future, right? So he knows that all these people are traitors to him, and yet he still keeps them around?
Uh-huh, and then, dismisses the people who try to warn him about this sort of thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Because he loves his family so much?
How are those related?
You know, his love is so unquestionable. At least for his son and daughter, who knows if he cares about his wife at all, that he sends Alicia and Elias off to Angel Island where they get shot down.
Uh-huh.
And then leaves them where they're presumed dead for God knows how long.
Yeah.
But how is he fully aware of the consequences of every action he takes?
Don't question it. Father
Don't question
knows best.
Anything.
Father knows best.
Oh, God. Father knows everything. Father has the eternity spanning spawn of creation telling his every move, I guess.
Apparently.
But just ignore all the times it goes wrong. Over and over and over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. I miss Nigel, and he didn't even exist.
What do you mean he didn't even exist?
King Nigel. He wasn't a. He was, well, at this time, he was Max.
Okay,
Nigel was later after the reboot. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
It's a different thing. Okay. Get rid of Max entirely and replace him with Nigel. That was the smart move.
But yeah. So, like, Sally literally says, okay, so my father's aware of all things to come. And the source is like, yeah, and you would be too once you complete this goo ritual. You know, make sure you get it all up your nose and into your ears.
Yeah.
So it can infect your brain.
Yeah. Sally's like, nah, that's cool.
Well, not even that yet. So, just, you know, literally he goes, behold, Mobius, almost 20 years later.
Uh-huh.
Keep in mind that, you know, the original future stories were going to be Knuckles 20 years later. But anyway, this is kind of, I guess, a random scene where it's, here's another war because, you know, screw what your mother thought of your life. It's going to go to crap.
It's always going to be war.
Also, I just really hate how this future Sally is, she looks exactly the same, except she's wearing this stupid tiara, like, way over her hair.
Yeah.
Like, it's just kind of floating over her bangs, like, half a foot in front of her face. It's just,
yeah, from the side especially, it looks really stupid.
Yeah. It looks like it's just this absolute afterthought, you know?
Yeah, they tack that on after the fact, almost, it looks like.
Ugh, you know, how do we show she's royalty and ruling in the future? But anyway, you know, here's your future. Everything's going to crap.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but can't I see what happens once you've, you know, shown me this cliffhanger? No, finish the cycle. Finish your dip.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't go all the way, you'll be cut off forever for reasons, you know?
Yeah.
This spoiler is behind a paid subscription fee. And if you don't join the source now, it'll be going back into the Disney vault.
Basically, yes.
Why is this an all or nothing thing? You know?
Right.
Like, you're an eternity spanning, you know, creation of the cosmos. Why would you impose limits on things like this? What does it matter to you? What is time?
The source of all for a small monthly subscription.
Yeah. For only 100 rings a month.
Oy.
But anyway, Sally's like, you know what? I'd rather keep the money, and decides no.
She says, nah, peace She's out.
This isn't right for me. Uh-huh. She doesn't want to know the future. And, you know, it might be nice to think, like, she thinks this sounds maybe kind of the suspect. You know, she's actually smart and says, wait, this is questionable.
Uh-huh.
Because nothing has lined up right for my father.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, Ken was not looking at the source as being...
Manipulative?
Manipulative, mm-hmm. or self-serving, or anything other than a... I don't know what it's supposed to be.
The source
literally
of all.
A convenient plot device to let you know everything forever.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Show me the future. The future sucks. Never mind.
Yeah, basically. So Sally gets out and says, okay, I get that, you know, to Elias, she says that you think that I deserve to be queen, but I don't want to follow that path. I need to, you know, figure things out for myself. And it says, you know, for once the choice was mine. So that could be kind of nice that she's, you know, you could say she's rejecting, you know, her father's control and the kingdom's traditions and forging her own path and all.
Uh-huh.
Except that, you know.
Except after this, yeah.
Everything in the long run, once again, completely contradicts and undoes this.
Yeah, pretty much.
So.
It all goes back to Father Knows Best. And he always seems to, apparently. Apparently. Except he doesn't, because everything goes wrong and he sucks.
Yeah. And then, I mean, okay, in Mobius 25 years later, which again was supposed to be the true future, how dare the editor and other writers say otherwise?
Uh-huh.
She's queen there. There's no context about how that happened. There's no acknowledgement of Elias's existence or what would have happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
Like, no mention of him at all. Just, she's queen there. And then, you know, stories coming up later have her still being, you know, very much subjected to her parents' whims and wills and kind of being more or less oppressed by her role and title as a princess. You know, you can't see your friends. You have to do this. You can't do that. You're miserable all alone and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, you get the whole drama of, oh, and, you know, King Acorn is ill and needs someone to succeed him soon and still wants you to marry Antoine. So actually, you better go marry Antoine and become queen right now, even though you didn't want this. Which, you know, she turns around and acts like it's her own choice, even though she didn't want it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and God, the mess of that story. I mean, Elias comes back afterwards and takes over for nonsense reasons.
Right.
At the last second. And then it's, and then you have the questionable bit where it really is phrased like her mom didn't want Sally to be queen anyway. She's so glad that Elias came back and was awaiting this moment to take over, you know, while Sally is already in position to be queen.
Right.
Queen Alicia's just kind of going, oh, thank God. Never mind that they do all this while Max is in the coma anyway and are ignoring his many future telling wishes, which didn't see all this coming. There's another traitor.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Uh-huh.
Look, something almost killed you and completely ruined your kingdom, but the goo pool didn't tell you that.
Max wanted that to happen.
Oh, it was all part of
his grand plan to something.
Destroy Mobotropolis from the inside, apparently.
I guess.
So, I think at the time, people were kind of okay with the story because, as it seems, it ends with Sally supposedly taking control of her future.
Yeah, which we know was obviously not the case, but, you know.
Yeah.
At the time, at least it was a nice sentiment, but,
yeah. Yeah.
It didn't stick.
The drama over the nudity, as it were.
Sure.
So, and then the further drama over the undoing of the nudity, as it were.
slightly too much anatomy.
Mm-hmm.
Slightly too much non-cartoonish anatomy.
So, a story called Ascension ends with Sally not ascending. And Girls Rule ends with no girls ruling.
Nope. Sally doesn't rule. Yeah.
Sally doesn't rule. Lupe loses her pack.
Lupe doesn't
and
rule.
And presumably her life because, you know.
Roboticization is somehow death now. Yeah.
Anymore. Along that line, you know, Hershey's story is a, I don't like the term nothing burger, but it pretty much is.
It's filler.
I mean, it still makes it sound like it's something. It's like a burger still sounds.
Makes like, it sound like it's too much. No, yeah, and I know that's why
like
I say
it's like a margarine sandwich.
It's filler. It's literally nothing.
It's two pieces of bread with some margarine. It's
meaningless.
It's like even then, if you, you know, if you were just going to have everybody forget about their dear beloved comrade Valdez and all of his deep characterization and camaraderie.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to think of any moment that he had with it. He doesn't have any character.
I was gonna say, he doesn't. No. Nothing ever happens with him.
You know, the fact that, like, they basically just go to, like, it's not even a rescue attempt.
No.
That could have, you know, maybe she could have, I don't know, learned something through trying and failing.
That could have been interesting.
Like, you know, had some growth over what this role as a supposed agent means to her because she never chose it to begin with.
Right.
But I don't know. They basically just go to confirm that Valdez was captured and roboticized, which, you know what? He disappeared during Robotnik's retakeover, except for the time he accidentally reappeared when he shouldn't have. And they could have just left it at that and had him reappear during that god-awful SVO story where they suddenly insist that they were best friends all along. And
of course,
there's another female character who only exists to be an informed love interest for the boys to apparently having been fighting over all this time, I guess, except SBO never even seems to acknowledge any of this either, because main characters don't get agency.
No. All right. Sure.
But that's several tiers down from Hershey herself. So,
right.
And then, you know, Bunny's story is, again, kind of a sweet sentiment, but yeah, it's basically, you know, Antoine, would you still love me if nothing about me changed?
Pretty much.
Which kind of, and it's like, did was she like kind of working under the assumption that, you know, this, like, they were only going to have a future if she got de-roboticized, which, you know, is a possibility, but not really addressed ever.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, you know, okay, good for him. Yes, I will still love you because I already am in love with you. That's, they're in love already, you know?
Right.
There's nothing really changing per se.
Silly.
It's, and I don't know, it's more the issue that the apparent plans for the future would have had her still doubting this for literal years, you know? Mm-hmm. Dozens upon dozens of issues going right up to their marriage. So again, it's undermining itself. What was the point?
There isn't one.
Completely random aside.
Uh-huh.
But the first panel of Sally staring into the pool of orange juice. It's kind of funny, but her reflection doesn't actually match.
No, it doesn't.
Her hair's completely different.
It looks completely different. Yeah, the goo pool. Yeah, she doesn't look right.
But yeah. I was going to say, are there any other instances of Spaz sneaking into the art somewhere?
I'm not sure.
It's that one panel of Elias.
Yeah.
James Fry's art's pretty sand out, and then that entire story for Julie Sue. I'm trying to think if they reuse part of the background from the story in another issue. Like, they just kind of distort it and reuse it in a different panel. When they go back to the Dark Legion base for literally no reason aside for Julie Sue getting kidnapped. But again, I digress. Repeatedly.
That's okay.
So that's girls' rule. Who ruled the most? Who ruled the least?
You decide.
I think it would have been nice if, you know, maybe more women could have worked on the issue.
That would have been cool.
There are, you know, some of the letterers and colorists and, you know, one artist
mm-hmm.
or a woman. There weren't a lot of women working on Archie Sonic at this point, but...
No, but...
You know.
Could have had a few more.
Yeah. Maybe some input on the writing. Maybe that would have been something.
Nah.
I know.
Could have had some input, but would the writer have listened? No.
Father knows best.
Uh-huh.
Ew. Ew.
Do we want to even bring up the off panel?
Is that the swimsuit one?
Yes.
Well, there it is.
Yep. Yep. Girls rule.
I liked writing off. Girls rule. Let's objectify them.
I mean, at least they acknowledge they'll get in trouble, but, you know, still.
It's okay if we objectify them because
we're acknowledging that we shouldn't. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's...
You're not helping your case, guys.
Not really.
Mm-hmm.
I miss writing off panel.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of a good way to get some of my anger out.
You can imagine it's very cathartic. Especially given the ones he wrote. Given the ones he wrote, yeah.
You mean I wasn't just being silly?
Sometimes.
Maybe. And then relying on much more talented artists than myself to carry the jokes.
Oh, whatever.
I will say, apparently the one that was, gosh, now that I think about it, was this all female characters? Was this more girl-driven off-panel than the entire Girls Rule? The one where Maureen is writing her personal little shipping fanfics?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And comics and things?
Yep.
Apparently, there's like a whole lot of fan art out there now that's like based on Maureen.
Based on Maureen's doing, stories.
Yeah, her little headcanon doodles and things. And it's like...
Good.
Well, I mean, that didn't exist anywhere else, so...
Good. Make it
once cane. Again, I unintentionally inspire something terrible on the internet. Terrible, I mean wonderful.
I was going to say, that's not terrible, that's beautiful.
I suppose.
That's glorious. Anyway.
Okay.
Girls rule.
They sure do.
I think this is a good they place sure to stop.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
They don't in this comic. Oh well.
They should have had the opportunity to do better.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Oh.
And it's not to say it never happens, but I don't know. I think there's some disappointment there.
Yeah, just a little. Well, thank you for joining me, Aaliyah. This was fun.
I hope we can maybe do something
yes.
again in the future, possibly without needing 2 years of prep time. And
I hope you will come back and we will talk about another fun-filled adventure comic book or whatever.
I mean, I do hope people are at least entertained and
well, based on
appreciate some in.
Say, but-
oh, Molly!
She had to get one last hit in.
Oh my god, you are so pushy. You are so pushy.
She is. She's like, you're done now.
You should have just heard the noise. I wish that picked up on the microphone.
I don't think it did.
Thing.
I don't think it did. Oh well.
Oh, god. She just made this little like noise. Like this. Not a cat noise. I don't know what to call that. I guess it's that you're done noise. I want attention.
I guess so. Fine. Well, we'll get out of here.
Okay.
Hope folks enjoyed this. They're based on the response last time. You guys seem to really like it, so thank you.
Okay, well, if I'm feeling up to it,
we'll do it again.
I don't know.
At some point.
If there's something else people are interested in covering.
Yep.
You know, suggest it, and we'll see what we can do.
Yes.
Molly,
tell us which girls ruled in your view in the comments below.
Cassie Clove.
They did.
I'm not biased at all.
You should be. You deserve to be. You can be biased. It's fine. They did win.
I don't have the confidence for that.
I know. You should, though.
No. No, I don't.
You should.
No, I don't should.
Whatever. Let's get out of here. Thank you again, Aaliyah.
Okay. Alrighty. Bye-bye. Well,
thanks, everybody. You've been listening to the Bumblecast. Be good to yourselves, be good to each other, and we'll see you next time. Well, do you want to do this?
No, I'm scared.
Why?
People don't like doing this crap.
People liked it last time. Well, then why do you want to do it?
I don't know. I never do anything.
Oh, it's
fun. I liked writing. You think I liked doing anything I've ever done?
I don't know. Maybe. You might have.
Aside from maybe, like, aggressively playing sports.
What about art? Drawing? I know you haven't done that in a long time, but you didn't enjoy that?
I hated it. I hate everything.
You shouldn't.
I wasn't even good at it.
That's a lie, and you know it. Also, talking about Archie Sonic is fun and funny.
Maybe. I hope I can make it funny. Or entertaining.
It
or
is.
Enlightening. Or...
People liked it last time. And this is the internet. You know they're not just saying it to be nice.
Well, it's a good thing Julie Sue and Sally Acorn
aren't
controversial topics in the least.
Aren't popular and controversial. I don't know how popular Julie Sue is anymore, but Sally. Yeah.
Compared to Hershey?
Well, okay, yes. Compared to Lupe, yeah, you're right.
Okay.
Yep.
Well,
anyway.
Can we get started so I can ruin?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. All right, I will start us off.
You've been listening to The Bumblecast, a co-production of Bumble King Comics and the KNGI Network. Original theme music composed by Ken Coda Snyder. Remixed intro by T-Lopes. Find out more information, along with podcast feeder links, MP3 downloads, and more at bumbleking.com and kngi.org.
Uh-oh. Cat attack. Molly.
Excuse you!
What did she do?
Decided to try to eat my friggin' laptop!
Well, she can do that when we're done.
Sit down. I'm sorry.
That's okay. We can edit this out. It's fine.
God. She goes from like 0 to 100. Just, hi, I'm sitting here. Actually, disaster.
Suddenly snack.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway.